Hi, I'm J. Christian Adams, president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. This is the Protecting Your Vote podcast. And don't forget, if you're watching on YouTube, please like or subscribe this podcast, especially this one, because it's got lots of good information. With me today as a guest is Don Palmer. He's on the Election Assistance Commission. Good afternoon, Don.
Thank you, Christian, for having me.
Good. Glad you're here.
To you as well.
So, Don, you and I, 20 years ago, were together at the United States Department of Justice in the voting section, weren't we?
We were.
That was so much fun.
Absolutely. We'll do it again anytime.
We'll do another show on that. So, a lot of stuff to cover today. I want to talk about what the EAC does. I want to talk about these information requests that the Department of Justice is making of states, and maybe some other things about military voting. But let's start with what the EAC is. Tell us about the EAC. What do you do on the EAC? How did you get there?
Sure, Christian. So the Election Assistance Commission was created after the Bush v. Gore litigation and the Help America Vote Act was passed and signed by President Bush after the 2000 election. And so it was actually one of the few bipartisan bills that were signed that has been signed. So the EAC was created to really create minimal standards for voting systems. That's really what came out of sort of what happened in Florida, was sort of hanging chads and sort of inaccuracies in the system. And so the EAC was created to create those minimal standards and create a testing regime at the federal level to really supplement and support activities in the states. And because these voting systems are going to end up in states and precincts across the country. So they wanted to set up that system. They wanted to set up a report to Congress on data after every federal election. They wanted to have a mechanism to provide federal grants. So when the Congress decides that it wants to spend some money on states and localities to improve elections, they're going to send that to the EAC, and then we distribute that to the states and the territories in a formula. Those are the primary missions. And basically, it brought the Clearinghouse Department from the Federal Election Commission that had been established since the early 70s. And it put that in the EAC and said, this is a great way to communicate best practices from states and localities to share that so members of the public and other local election officials can see those best practices and make good decisions on good policy. I ended up there. I served in the Department of Justice. I then went into election administration. I was the director of elections in Florida, then went up to be the secretary in Virginia. Eventually ended up as a nominee for the Election Assistance Commission. And so nominated by Trump. Eventually, I made it in 2019. And that's where we are today. And the last thing I would say is that we are really a bipartisan agency. We have two Democrats and two Republicans. We have to work together to find those areas that we can agree with and work with. But there's a lot of fundamentals in elections that we do to try to improve the election administration process and try to leave some of the more, policy, political issues to the Congress and to the states.
So I want to talk shortly about commercial data and voter roll cleanup. But before we do that, I'm on the board of advisors to the Election Assistance Commission, right? I'm on the Civil Rights Commission, and we picked board of advisors. So we had a meeting in Washington a couple of months ago, I think. That board of advisors is a sort of an ad hoc committee that comes and goes to give you guys advice. Is that right?
Well, the board of advisors, which you're a member of, is actually in HAVA. It's a, we call a FACA board. It's an advisory board to the EAC. They knew that the EAC was going to have to periodically update standards. They were going to do reports to Congress, and they wanted to have an advisory boards of different institutions, both on the Hill and in the administration or the executive branch, plus and that would mean an individual like you that was appointed by a member of Congress, the leadership. And so we really value those boards because we couldn't do what we do without them. They include election officials as well. And so it's one of those boards that we rely on for advice.
So let's talk about some current news that's happening out there. If you were to follow election news, you would see that the United States Department of Justice has sent out to a lot of states requests for documents, including voter rolls, right? Yep. Now, New Hampshire, Secretary of State Scanlon in New Hampshire, and I think Secretary of State Simon in Minnesota have kind of gone berserk and said, no, we're not giving these documents to the Justice Department. By golly, we're going to fight. And Don, I happened to pull up United States Code before this interview. For those following along, it's 52 United States Code 20703. You're never going to guess what the law actually says.
What does it say?
It says that the Attorney General has a right to this information. And here's what exactly it says. Any record or paper, meaning election record, that's retained and preserved shall, upon demand in writing by the Attorney General or his representative to the person having the record, be made available for inspection, reproduction, and copying for the Attorney General. Right. Now, that's in United States Code 52 USC 20703. I am perplexed why it is that Secretary of States are not understanding that this is the federal law.
Well, I think a part of the view, and I can't speak for the individual states.
Nor would I ask.
Right. But I think, you know, the chief election official, which I served, is obviously you're looking at your state law. You're probably advising with your attorney general, your state attorney general, and you may have a practice in there. You're very protective of some of the information. But in my mind, as you point out, this law was adopted in the early 1960s, if not on 1965.
It's right.
Been around for a very long time.
Oh, it is 1960, right there.
It's been around for very long. Exactly.
And you know why?
To get documents to basically, it's like, we want to trust, but we got to verify.
And at the time in 1960, Secretary Scanlon and Secretary Simon, a lot of states were not registering certain voters, like in Mississippi. And this was the way for the Attorney General to get the voter list and see who's getting registered. Also, every single state has mistakes. If I got the voter roll from New Hampshire and compared it to Massachusetts, guess what I would find? I would find people registered in both states. I would find missing dates of birth in New Hampshire's voter rolls. I'd find no addresses. I'd find duplicates, because we just did a report where we issued in Maine, where thousands of duplicates. We just did a report in Pennsylvania and New York. Huge amounts of problems on the rolls, bad hygiene. I think you've called it bad hygiene, right? So that's what the Justice Department is up to. I know the secretaries have been asking, why do they want this information? Here's your answer. They want to check your work.
They want to verify, exactly. They want to trust, but they want to verify. And it's not new. I mean, when we were at the Department of Justice, I don't think it's a state secret to say that I think it was the Georgia voter ID case. You know,
right.
They're going to ask for registrations and documentation that by some could consider private or confidential, but it's really just voter registration data, which is generally open to the public. But a more recent example, and I'll use the example when I had moved on to be the secretary in Virginia, and the MOVE Act was being sort of not fully enforced at the Department of Justice. At least that was the perception that was sort of out there by the media. And, you know, all of a sudden, the Department of Justice with Assistant Attorney General Perez, they made a full court press with the attorneys in the Department of Justice. And it's not surprising that they would have one or two attorneys, sometimes three.
Yeah.
They would get on a phone call with myself as the chief election official of Virginia and say, we need this evidence. You need to prove that you are complying with the MOVE Act and that you have ballots that are going out. And occasionally you would see the same thing with registration or list maintenance activities. And so it sometimes is a jump in the deep end of the pool where it's a little chilly. My advice, and I did then, is I'm going to work with you as best I can to give you the data you need to show that we're complying with the law. And sometimes, being at the state level, you're working with your counties, and they may not have collected that data and provided it to you, but you need to go back to them and say, hey, look, what can we do here? Because we want to be able to show that we're complying with an important federal law here. And this is a priority of the Trump administration. It's really part of the NVRA that is balanced with the access and registration.
If I was going to put my chips on is Justice or New Hampshire going to win this, I'm going to move my chips to the United States Department of Justice on this fight. I'm all with Don Palmer, Commissioner on the Election Assistance Commission. This is the Protecting Your Vote podcast. Don, you mentioned NVRA, voter roll cleanup. I just testified to Congress recently that new tools need to be used to do a voter roll cleanup. The NVRA was written before the internet, really. It's the post office was the NVRA's engine, and that's showing signs of wear. You are one of the leading proponents of a new tool. I'll just call it commercial data. You've been talking about this for years. PILF uses commercial data in its voter roll analysis. We use Experian and all sorts of credit reporting. We can lock in who's alive and who's dead using commercial data. I know that the Election Assistance Commission has been considering how to recommend this. I know the Board of Advisors made comments. I wrote a recommendation as a member of the Board of Advisors that this is something that needs a lot of attention and has a lot of potential to make voter rolls cleaner. Why are you such an advocate of using commercial data for voter roll cleanup?
Well, I want to put election administrators in the best position possible. I don't want to set them up for failure. As the years and decades have gone by with NVRA, the use of national change of address, for example, there's not a great way to track very mobile voters when they move to a new state or new county. There's not a lot of great tools out there. As greater minds than I, the Supreme Court of the United States in the Husted case said itself after doing the analysis before finding for the state of Ohio is that, look, national change of address is not working for election administrators as it did, let's say, 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's just not. And so what the first time I sort of used it was to supplement the national change of address, to provide that little bit of intelligence to the election official that, look, Don Palmer might have moved to another state. Now, you're still going to go through the NVRA procedures. It's one more tool in the box, as you mentioned, but it's really a bit of intel because it's not instantaneously removing somebody. It's just letting you know that when a voter doesn't use NCOA like most young people and an increasingly number, a large number of Americans don't use NCOA, and now you have to have an ID to change your address with the NCOA, this is sort of reducing the amount of people that use this product for the post office. So I'm trying to give tools in a not, you know, in a fair manner that election officials across the country can use. And so the AAC is doing research on that. And we had a report that we're going to provide to the Congress that talks about the jurisdictions, the states and localities that used it. It will really help jurisdictions identify folks that may have moved, and then it has that best address. So you're not helpless as an election administrator.
Yeah.
You can use it to send a mailer to that new individual. Look, this is not, I'm actually trying to increase awareness of the product and the fact that it's out there because counties such as Orange County, California, all the way to the South and to West Virginia have used this type of data and used it successfully. I just want to make sure that election administrators and states, that we can assist them with sort of an understanding of this information. So when they use it, they feel comfortable with it and the voters benefit.
I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you've seen it all. I mean, some crazy stuff, which we can't even get into. Maybe we should talk about Broward County, but we won't. But when you were in Florida, you had some state county election officials who were one in Hillsborough was like, I'm not going to report anybody for election crimes. Like, you had some crazy, you've seen a bunch of crazy stuff over.
Well, you know, let's not talk about individual counties, but I would say this is that a lot of that stopped when Governor DeSantis came.
That's true.
There's always been, and look, you know, every state is different. The powers of the governor, who has that power? Sometimes the Secretary of State or the Secretary doesn't have the power to sanction
Mississippi,
or they just don't have the authority as much as you would hope or think that oversight.
Right.
But Governor DeSantis really took it on board as like, look, if they're not following the law and they're not complying with reasonable standards, we're going to remove them.
Right.
And, you know, all they had to do was once or twice and the message was heard.
Palm Beach.
And it. Well, exactly. And it wasn't just the supervisors of elections. I mean, when the district attorneys and counties across the state failed to comply with criminal statutes, he didn't hesitate to remove them. So I think, look, it happened to be in there. He thought it was important enough that if you're not complying with the law, you know, we're going to remove you.
So let me ask you one last thing. There's a lawsuit. It's settled. It's called Public Interest Legal Foundation versus Oregon, or maybe the Secretary of State's name. Here's what we found. Eric right? Which, look, that's a whole other topic. Eric was sending death reports to Oregon of people who were still alive. And Oregon was removing them from the rolls and then having to put them back on the rolls. And so PILF asked for the list maintenance records of this, you know, inside-out exercise. And we found that Oregon, listening to Eric, was removing living voters as dead and then fixing it. I mean, that's one of the craziest ones.
Well, look, you know, we don't have to get in a whole discussion or debate about Eric.
Right, right.
Well, look, sometimes the data is just wrong that you get from Social Security.
I mean, how much you want to bet the commercial data on those names would have shown they're still alive?
Well, look, that's why, you know, when we talk to counties, sometimes they have to touch base and have to verify with different databases. It's a shame that sometimes there are errors, but we have processes in place that can reinstate that person. But no database is perfect, and that's why when I talk about giving additional tools and support to counties across the country and states across the country, it's like, look, you need to be doing all these things just to keep up.
Yeah.
And this gets back to the whole reasonable standard. It is like, look, you know, for a reasonable doubt to convict someone, it seems to be such a high standard. But having a reasonable effort to identify and remove ineligible voters is so low.
Right.
You know, the courts have really put election administrators in a very bad position across the country.
That's
an erroneous rule. And it really destroyed sort of the balanced approach of the National Voter Registration Act. So no longer do you have access and integrity. The courts took a view that is difficult to really understand.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you're referring to the 11th Circuit case involving Brenda Snipes and Broward, and also the 6th Circuit case, the Public Interest Legal Foundation versus Benson. These two courts of appeals have basically gutted out the NVRA and said that reasonable means you have any program rather than
effective. And it's very interesting because, you know, once she left the office and they brought incompetent people, it really did not take that long a time for them to get their voter rolls
right.
In a better state.
Thank you very much, Dawn, for joining us. This has been Protecting Your Vote. I'm J. Christian Adams. Dawn Palmer of the Election Assistance Commission, thank you for your time. And if you'd like more information about anything we've discussed here, you can find it at publicinterestlegal.org. Till next time, thanks for joining us.